Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Thanks very much, Ruth. And just a bit of news coming in on the wires. The United Nations interim force in Lebanon, that's the peacekeeping force that the Irish serve on, said on Wednesday that Israeli forces fired on its peacekeepers yesterday in the south of the country near the de facto border with Israel. No injuries there, and the wires are supplying more information on that. We'll bring it to you if we get it. But we're going to move to the question as to whether or not we are being gouged in our energy bills. It's a question we'd all like answered, no more so than when we're either prepaying the bill or watching the bank balance plummet when the direct debit goes out. Well, today at the Oireachtas Energy Committee, the Economic and Social Research Institute raised questions over the gap between the wholesale prices paid by energy companies and the retail electricity prices paid by us. Well, for more on this, I'm joined by Muireann Lynch, Senior Research Officer at the ESRI. Muireann, your colleagues today quoted stats from the International Energy Agency that the gap between Irish wholesale and retail electricity prices have widened here since the energy crisis. It's happened in other European countries too, but to a greater extent here in Ireland. And they suggest that that may suggest a role for a regulatory inquiry. What would the parameters of that inquiry be, Muireann?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to say is we're always kind of working off publicly available data. And obviously, the only kind of entities who really know what's going on are the electricity firms themselves. But the kind of thing you tend to look at in these studies would be what's happening to the underlying fuel prices, whether that's gas or coal or whatever, and what's happening to carbon prices, and also what's happening on forward markets. So not only what is the price of gas today, but what do we expect the price of gas to be tomorrow? And then obviously we're also want to be looking at the wholesale price that the companies buy electricity at, and then the retail price, which is the price they sell it on to us at. So those are the kind of parameters you'd be looking at. However, it is, as you can imagine, notoriously difficult to get from that kind of data to a definitive answer to the question of, is there price gouging going on or not? Are we being ripped off or not? Because if it was easy to tell whether or not we were being ripped off, then it would be very, very easy to fix the problem. So doing a kind of a very comprehensive study is a really important first step, and it's fantastic to think that that's going to be going ahead. But we really can't preempt the outcome of that, even in terms of the findings, let alone in terms of any potential policy actions that might follow on from it.
Okay, and you know, the legal area and the parameters may not be your bag, but would there be additional powers needed for an inquiry into that, or does the CRU, the regulator, regulatory authority have those powers already?
Yeah, I can't see the need for any additional powers in order to perform an inquiry. The question is, on foot of the inquiry, are there policy recommendations? And if so, would new powers be required there? But honestly, I think there's probably a lot that can be done even without new powers being required, either for the CRU or for the department, for anyone else. The first question is just, what are the data actually showing us? Because a huge problem when it comes to these cross-comparison studies is, are you comparing like with like? And at the moment, I'm pretty confident that we're not. Now, that's not to say that there isn't a growing gap between wholesale and retail prices. It's very important that we look at that. But these kind of cross-comparisons with other European countries are not straightforward on the basis of the data we have.
Okay, one of the things that's been said before, or a couple of the things that have been said before about other European countries versus Ireland, is the distance fuel has to travel, the dispersed nature of housing and the upkeep of the network costs, distance from source of energy. Are these the kind of things you think would be relevant when assessing the price comparisons with other European countries?
So there's kind of two separate questions. One is just looking at the level of prices, whether it's wholesale prices or retail prices in Ireland versus other countries. And the other is looking at the gap between the wholesale prices and the retail prices. So things that you mentioned there, things like how dispersed our housing is, how dispersed our population is, the kind of network that we have, the kind of fuel that we rely on for electricity and other energy needs, those are all highly relevant when it comes to looking at the level of prices in Ireland, whether it's wholesale, retail or both.
Okay. Do you mean the dependence on natural gas in Ireland?
Exactly, yeah, amongst other things. They're not as relevant really when it comes to the gap between the wholesale and the retail price.
Okay. Your colleagues quoted the Eurostat figures as well, and it showed residential electricity prices have doubled between 2018 and 2024. Now, we know there was the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but were there other factors at play there?
Well, coming out of COVID, there was a spike in energy prices. And again, that was not limited to Ireland. And that was simply because kind of as demand kicked up after COVID, our storage wasn't quite where it needed to be. So prices went up. But Ukraine really was the main factor there. What's a bit more concerning is that while prices spiked across the board, because as you say, of the gas price spikes in the wake of the invasion of Ukraine, the prices have not come down in Ireland as quickly as they've come down in other countries. So there's an asymmetry there, and that is something that concerns us a little bit. It could be partly to do with risk factors in that for various reasons, it's just riskier to provide and produce energy in Ireland. So you would expect prices, you would expect some divergence there, but the kind of the lack of the drop in Ireland versus other countries, I think there's probably something else going on there, and that's something that I'm sure will be covered as part of any review.
Okay, but you're not going to speculate on what that else is, but you're very curious to know what it is.
Well, I mean, like I said, I certainly think the riskiness of the Irish market versus others is one factor. I think competition, particularly in the electricity sector, could be another factor. However, there could be other factors, again, that I haven't even thought of.
Okay. One of the things you were talking about, or your colleagues were talking about at the committee, was how to protect the most vulnerable in society, and the issue of energy credits came up. The government wasn't minded to include universal energy credits in the budget back in October. They did reduce VAT, and according to the ESRI, not a good move.
Well, it's just in terms of kind of how much good do you do for the most vulnerable households for every euro spent. And the data is quite clear that changing prices, whether that's fiddling around with VAT, fiddling around with excise, whatever, that is the most expensive thing you can do that will help the smallest amount of vulnerable households. Then something like a universal credit is in the middle. And then you get the most bang for your buck by using something, using a targeted measure that actually goes directly toward the households that are most in need. And obviously in the budget, the decision was made to maintain the lower VAT rate at 9%. So for, you know, that works out at about 70, 80 euro per household. And, you know, you could have done, say, like, an energy credit of between 70 and 80 euro for the same amount of money. However, that is nothing like the kind of energy credits we saw in the past. So either way, we do need to see this kind of move away from these large one-off measures, A, because they're not targeted, but B, because they're so big. I mean, they certainly weren't a long-term solution.
Okay, so if you're going to do it, spend your money on targeted measures. So rather than giving everybody 70 or 80 euro, target more substantial sums at vulnerable households, and, you know, do it at the most cost efficient means to the exchequer.
Yeah, and that makes intuitive sense, right? If you want to help vulnerable households, you should target vulnerable households instead of just lowering VAT for everybody.
Now we are going to, that was Muireann Lynch, Senior Research Officer at the ESRI, and listening to that, Camille Loftus, Head of Advocacy and Public Affairs at Age Action Ireland. Camille, good evening to you first.
Good evening to you.
Would you welcome what was called for there, an inquiry from the regulator on electricity prices to explain that gap between wholesale and retail?
I mean, I think we know that our electricity prices are high comparatively, so anything that will help us to reduce that is something that we would welcome, because obviously energy costs are a really, really important issue for older people.
And so what specifically, you know, would you like to see being done about this? Is it give transparency to the public, or would you like to see something deeper being done?
Well, I think transparency is important to inform policy, but I suppose to give a little bit of context, this is a much more important issue for older people for a variety of reasons. They tend to live in older homes, which are poorly insulated, use less energy efficient heating methods, and more of them live on their own, which means that their electricity costs, their heating costs are higher, right, than most people. The other thing is that as we get older, we lose our ability to keep ourselves warm. And so being able to maintain a warm home is particularly important as we age. It's important for our general welfare, but it's also very important for our health. And lots of older people will use, you know, for example, devices to help with their health management, which also, of course, use electricity. One of the issues that older people do face in relation to energy costs is that you frequently get discounts if you are willing to do online billing and to pay via direct debit. Now, that basically introduces a price penalty for older people, many of whom are not online, who are digitally excluded, and many of whom, particularly those who are managing on lower fixed incomes, much prefer to manage their income in cash because it gives them much greater control over their finances and meeting the various costs that they have to meet.
So you're talking about them being excluded from the discounts that go for direct debits, paperless billing, and they may just have had a legacy relationship with the electricity company, which has rolled over for decades. I mean, I know in the case of having advised somebody on changing their bill over relatively recently, that their unit electricity rate was 50% higher as a result of that. I think it was 30 cent per kilowatt hour as opposed to 2021 being offered elsewhere.
So, and as you know, those price comparisons, again, are things you generally have to access online. So if you're digitally excluded, we are increasingly seeing real tangible costs being associated with that. And then, of course, just picking up on the issues that you were discussing towards the end of your last piece there.
The universal benefits, VAT cuts versus targeted measures. Yeah, what did you think of that?
Well, you know, I think we all understood that the universal energy credits were not a sustainable way of going forward. And both Minister Donoghue and Minister Chambers had made it very clear that they weren't going to continue them in the current budget. But what they did say was that they were going to replace those with permanent and targeted measures. And that didn't happen. The household benefits package that about two-thirds of older people are able to access, that hasn't been increased in value since 2013, whereas electricity prices in that period of time have increased by 84%. So you can see people are much less, you know, are much worse off in real terms.
So would you be saying that you want universal measures from which older people would benefit, or would you be setting older people apart as a cohort that you'd like to see get increased targeted measures?
Yeah, I mean, I think that targeting energy supports on older people is particularly important, both for their own welfare and indeed for the knock-on impacts that has on demand for health services. So we've proposed, for example, an energy guarantee that would take account both of the energy efficiency of your home and of the cost of electricity to ensure that older people can, in fact, afford the heat that they need to keep them in reasonable health. And that can be done as a targeted measure. There's a variety of different mechanisms you can use in relation to that. But it would certainly mean that the support was provided, as your previous speaker was saying, into the households that actually need it most, rather than a smaller amount of support being distributed over a larger number of households who may not be in such need.
Camille, thanks very much. That's Camille Loftus, Head of Advocacy and Public Affairs at Age Action. And also listening to this is Dara Cassidy, Head of Communications at bonkers.ie. Good evening, Dara.
Good evening.
What's your best guess as to the disparity between wholesale and retail prices? We look across Europe and Irish people go, why us? Why are we paying more?
Yeah, well, firstly, and this is going to be cold comfort to a lot of listeners, we're not quite as expensive compared to the rest of Europe as sometimes people think. A lot of other countries are struggling still. So there's a monthly report that's released by agencies, energy agencies in Europe that looks at the monthly price of electricity. And the latest report shows that prices in Germany, Denmark, the UK and Belgium are actually higher for electricity than they are in Dublin. Now, again, I know that's cold comfort because they're high here, but they're even higher elsewhere. Why are they high? I mean, we kind of don't know. And this is where, in some ways, the calls for an Oireachtas inquiry are welcome. But I don't think we need an Oireachtas inquiry to do it. I think the government could just direct and tell the CRU to find the information. Because as Muireann was saying earlier on, there is a big gap between the cost of generating our electricity, which is around 10 to 11 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, even to begin with, that is high. So why is that high? I mean, we have a weakly connected grid. We can't import a lot of electricity more cheaply from other countries. Yes, we have a dispersed population. We have older, smaller, less efficient generators.
So you're less inclined to believe it's gouging?
No, just quickly though, okay, so 10 to 11 cents, so automatically we're high, but what is in that other 20 cents? Because the price that people pay, the retail price, is around 32 to 33 cents, excluding VAT. We'd exclude VAT because at least we know where the VAT goes, but we have no transparency around where that other 20 to 22 cents goes. And there are loads of things that make up the charge: imperfection charges, capacity market payments, interconnector fees. We need to invest in battery storage because, as we know, the wind does not always blow, the sun does not always shine. Is that being passed on? Hedging costs is another thing as well. That's something that Muireann touched on. I think our hedging market is maybe underdeveloped, but like we don't know. And I think the opposition, and probably the media would love to find out, because it would give them great, you know, talking points to think that we're all being ripped off and that the 20 cents is all being kept by Electric Ireland and Bord Gáis Energy and we're being fleeced. I really don't think that's the case.
I suppose people would like to see the data that would give a detailed and granular explanation behind the bills. But I suppose, look, until we get that information, what's the kind of savings that you're looking at there, seeing as that's what you're about? How much of a saving percentage-wise could people potentially make if they switch?
Yeah, so there are still big savings, but I do agree we need more transparency. And I think if we had that transparency, we could then see where we need to make improvements. But in terms of reducing the cost, I mean, if you were to switch, you can still get discounts of maybe 20 to 30%. So this would bring your price for electricity, for example, down from around 32 to 33 cents, excluding VAT, to maybe 25 or 26 cents. And that can make a big difference. And it's the same for gas. I do accept your previous interviewee's point that some of those best deals are reserved for people who pay by direct debit and online. But some suppliers like SSE or Tristia, for example, I was just taking a quick look, it does have a 22% discount on electricity for people who want to pay by cash and check. Okay. So there are still discounts out there. Other than that, very quickly, if you are on a smart meter and if you move your electricity to other times of the day, if you're on a smart tariff, you can avail of cheaper rates. Okay. That is using appliances after 11 or outside of peak hours.
Yeah, if you're on that smart tariff as opposed to the flat rate. Okay, Dara.
Yes, that's really important.
Okay, we got to leave it there. Dara Cassidy from bonkers.ie, and thanks also to Camille Loftus from Age Action and Muireann Lynch from the ESRI.